Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They are the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 17th to the 19th, 2019 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. Today, we are going to be talking about a small studio that makes amazing terrain, does all sorts of great work here in New England, Iron Hammer Studios. I am joined by the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you?
Doing great, John. Thank you.
So, I love the smile on your face, as usual.
I always have a hard time getting through your cheesy intro without laughing, you know that.
I know, and yet, over 10, and yet people demand we do it. And the outro is even worse.
It is.
It's absolutely worse, but it's become a thing. And today we're joined by not one, but two amazing individuals from Iron Hammer Studios. We're joined by Dave and Tony. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Thank you, John. We're great. It's been a long weekend.
Tell me about it. We're recording live at Huzzah in beautiful South Portland, Maine, at the Doubletree, and it's been a long one.
It really has. It's been awesome, though. It's been an amazing weekend.
It's good, right? But, like, we woke up this morning, and, like, I heard him doing whatever. And I was like, I'll go back down for another hour or two. And then I looked at the clock. No. Like, we had to be on the go.
Yeah, it was 9 o'clock, and we had to be here for 10. So that's the way things go con weekends, so.
True.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you're not running late, you're not running.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we had, like, a six-hour setup time.
Oh, my
God.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, I mean, fortunately, we streamlined the process, so 6 hours would have been 12 had we didn't do it at the old one.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because we definitely went for streamlining it this time, and we're like, well, I think we cut it down to 6 this time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of tables, a lot of terrain and stuff. Yeah.
I mean, we set
all
up
all the little detail pieces.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, once you get the boards down, that feels like, okay, you know, we're there. Then you put up the buildings, and you're like, we're still not there, though. You know, there's now the little details, and then the rubble as it gets thrown on afterwards. Before you know it, you're like, that's dinner time already.
Oh, man. And I think we set up 11 tables.
11 tables?
Yeah.
All bolt action.
All bolt action.
All custom made, right?
Every single one of them.
Yeah. And I got to say, last year, I looked at your tables, and I thought they were like museum quality pieces. So, like, how do you guys draw the line between making it look historically accurate and beautiful and playable? Like, do you make any concessions for that kind of stuff? Or what do? Where do you lean?
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah, no, there always has to be a point you pick where you go, okay, how much more detail do I want to put on this? And how fragile do I want it to be? We really focus on keeping things durable,
mm-hmm.
you know, as much as possible, because we move things around a lot. So it really is a... I don't know if we have a reason of how we picked this process of where we go, okay, no, this is going to be good. I think it's just the experience over the years of doing this for the last... Well, Tony's been doing it like 30 years.
Yeah. It was like, I remember one of the frustrating things was when we were doing 40K many years ago,
mm-hmm.
Was that the terrain was perfunctory at best. Then we were like, well, this isn't what it should look like. And, you know, when you look at the codex with the guys at Games Workshop are doing, you know, it's like, I just paid $70 for this, but it looks like this.
Yep.
So, you know, the effort had to be put in to make it look better. But then we found that the function mattered, too. Because, oh, can my dreadnought go up here? Well, I can't stand there. Look, he keeps falling over.
Right.
You know? So then we were like, well, like, we got to make it so that it's a playable piece. But as we all know, it starts to get very ziggurat looking.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
I hate that look.
And I hate that look. Yeah. Exactly. So it became like this, figuring out, like, literally, is it 11 degrees slope or 15 degrees slope? Like, how much can you get away with to imply a hill or something?
Mm-hmm.
But so that, you know, a noise marine can still stand on it and not fall over.
Right.
So it's been a long process for me for that, figuring out what those are. Certainly, like with Warlord Games, you know, all the advent of all these plastic miniatures now that we play with,
yeah.
Things now can stand more readily. Those metal ones are just
so top heavy. You can run over, yeah.
Right, exactly. So you can get away with more. Like, there's definitely this terrain that I've built now that, they're like, oh, I can play 40K on it. I'm like, well, but most of it's plastic now and resin, so I guess we can get rid of it.
You'd be okay.
But back in the day, you'd be like, yeah, they'd probably fall on that hill and, you know.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, like, widths. Sidewalks have to be wide enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people look at it and go, you know, oh, your sidewalk looks kind of wide, or the balcony looks kind of wide, you know. And I'm like, oh, it is. It's definitely not scale. It doesn't work that way, because the more realistic it looks, the more likelihood a figure base will not fit.
Right.
True.
And the more that you make it so that somebody can actually put the, you know, false chimiaga up on the second floor balcony, the more it starts to look a little cartoony. So you got to kind of try to work between those two worlds as far as trying to make it implied and look as real as possible, but knowing that it is a game piece. It's not a 135 scale diorama or something.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a common line. It's like, where do you draw a line?
Absolutely.
And, you know, maneuverability, because we design most of our terrain to be drop terrain so that it can become different things each time. So it's about versatility, you know, so that's why we use a lot of extra bits that are add-ons, you know, little file cabinets, the rubble that we make, you know, all these little bits, which is kind of the parts that bring it all together. Because if we just put those buildings down just as they are, they'll look like practically much anything else, because they're really... They can be looked very plain.
True.
Yeah. So, but it's when we add all the little bits that we've collected and assorted and scratch built and all of that, that's really what starts to bring that table to life and still keeps it a gaming piece, so that, you know, players can still move, reach into a room and, you know, not smash everything as they're trying to do it, or not even be able to get their hand in there.
Right.
So, right, you know, those are always the design caveats you got to watch out for.
Tractor factories that you guys saw.
Oh, beautiful.
Well, why not make it going this way and that way? And, you know, even when you look at actual designs of the factories that I'm trying to, you know, insinuate, this stuff where it's like, well, yeah, but if I put this across, like you said, somebody's hand might fit, most guys' hands aren't going to fit, and they're all in danger of, you know, knocking something off, breaking it.
Absolutely.
So, like Dave was just saying, the consideration of it is going to be played with, can people get their hands in? Can miniatures be maneuvered within the space? And if not, just make it an area of denial.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, that's not a bad thing. And I like what you're saying, Dave, about how, like, you have the tables, but then you add extra stuff to it. So I've noticed, for example, you guys use a lot of things in the base materials.
We do.
To kind of add on. And Jorg was on, what was it, three episodes ago?
Three episodes.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated when I talked with him that I like to kind of know people's backgrounds. Because what you guys do, I mean, it's very practical, but at the same time, there's a lot of artistic creativity involved. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when Jorg was on, I was thinking, like, we have a kit here from him. We'll have some video or stills up. He did this whole new Kickstarter, and I was saying, you know, you design these things. Like, where did this come from? Like, did you do this before you came over? Or, like, how's this? And he had no background in it. So do you guys have, like, an engineering background, or do you have, like, a design background, or art, or, like... Where does this all come from? Is this hidden talent? Like,
I did love art class in high school.
Right, you just got trained in it, probably not.
I actually, when I was younger, I was definitely a model builder.
Okay.
I was definitely into in-scale train building. Not that I was huge in it at the time, but I definitely was interested in that stuff. So I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of, you know, I'm very good at research. That's kind of how I got going on it, and just, you know, I guess, yeah, some of it is just being able to do it. You know, there's a big piece of just being able to do it.
Of course, yeah.
But, you know, and I also paint houses for a living.
Oh, true.
So, you know, like, getting to see weathered paint up close and personal, yeah, I got plenty of that in my background, so.
And I just joined a dark cult. Some of you might be familiar with.
that I've had to make sacrifices to Cthulhu to be able to be granted these powers.
But that helps too, you know.
Right. In fact, I don't even really know where it comes from. And I just find myself in a pool of sweat some night on the floor and something's done.
Oh my God. There's a lot to be said for natural talent, though, I think. I mean, there's that whole thing in the artistic community, not a part of the artistic community. It's like, you know, artists can't be trained, they have to be born kind of thing. I don't really think that's true, but at the same time, there's definitely some kind of an innate talent or ability to be.
Yeah,
like, people will look at, like, trash, to me it's trash, and you're like, hmm. You know, and then 2 days later they have a city built out of like egg crates and whatever.
Yeah, like you and I, if we looked at it, we'd have trash, right?
Yeah, my wife, when we first got married, she was very crafty. She's still crafty, she didn't do as much, but I would throw stuff away and she'd be just very unhappy. That's right.
Right.
It was an empty egg crate, it's trash.
What do you think that is? Trash?
Yeah.
No, that's treasure. That's terrain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So, but I did that ability to
king
see,
traps, huh?
See, take nothing and see doing something right. With it. There's a lot to be said for that. I can't do it.
Something I'd say to the people who are listening to this, because it is a very popular question to ask regarding, you know, is it talent? Is it training? Is it persistence? Is it, you know, certainly it's a combination of all of those things. What I've found really is, I know I'm talented. I know that I have this, and a lot of people say that I have a talent for things because I've always had these artistic talents for them, if you will. You know, well, you know, when I was... It's hard to say that, but the reality is you can tell when somebody's got more of a knack for something than they don't. I mean, we all watch sports, and we all see the ones who look like they really have earned their ability on the court.
Yeah.
And the ones that are like, you know, where's this coming from? You know what I mean? It's obviously a dark cult that they've joined.
Well,
you're
a very humble man, but I want to say out loud here, you're one of the best artists.
Comes down, it's practice, really. It really is practice.
Practice makes permanent.
Because a lot of people think, well, I'm not talented. And talent can make something that's really good awesome, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But if a talented person is not motivated to learn it, not motivated to do it, I mean, I've got a couple friends who are amazing painters for their miniatures, but they will do 5 or 6 guys out of a platoon of 40, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they'll never do the rest of them. Because I just wanted to paint a couple figures. So their army, if you will, never really comes to that moment, right?
Yeah.
But then I've watched other people that are in our clubs and stuff. We're like, oh, I'm not really good. My stuff's really blows. It's like, you know, I'm kind of bummed out about it because I know what I want, but I can't do it.
Yeah.
But my goodness, they got the whole army painted. You know what I mean? And then the next time they come back, you know, they ask me, like, well, how do you do a flesh wash or what have you, right? And they learn from it. They really take it to heart. The next thing you know, they show up later, and the whole next armory unit that they've done is better.
Yeah.
It's because that persistence of, like, I'm going to keep doggedly trying to get this the way I want it. And before you know it, some of the guys who do the best armies and stuff like that are ones who are like, yeah, like this guy over here 15 years ago. Yeah, it looked like this. Trust me, kid, you know. If you just stick with it, you're going to end up as good as this guy over here because he just kept at its persistence.
Yeah.
You know, talent isn't really the thing. I mean, I'm not saying that no talent counts. It'll make something good great. But persistence and the desire to just keep at it, practice, that's really it, any of this stuff.
Yeah, that's true in almost anything, I guess,
right,
really.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, like, for someone like me who doesn't have that extra spark, like, it's good to know that you just, like you said, you just practice makes perfect, right? But I think if you
have... No, it does not make perfect. It makes permanent.
Well, it can make perfect. Right?
There is no perfection because it's never done.
But, like, if you have the talent, I think it gives you the leg up. It gives you that spark. So, like, when you're starting off maybe and you're thinking, oh, this is awful, your awful isn't as awful as, say, my awful. So it kind of motivates you to kind of keep going, whereas, like, someone like me, I have to look and be like, this is bad, but then I have to find something... that says just stick with it, so that allows you to kind of go.
I'll tell you from my experience, Jonathan, the emotional or mental response that you get when you're looking at something that you're kind of trying to make happen and it's not going to work, I get exactly the same emotional mental response. I truly do.
That's interesting.
Because my experience is very much like your experience. The difference is somebody else might look at it and go, like, oh, geez, Tony, I mean, come on, really? But, you know, but the thing is that because for me, it's almost like the bar's been elevated a little bit more emotionally.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm expecting more out of myself. I'm not like, oh, geez, I just started doing this. You know, like, calm down. Yeah. No, I'm like, oh, come on, you've been at this for 30 years. What's going on?
It should be better. What's wrong with you? Right.
It's
funny. I find that with a lot of creative types, though, that you kind of have this, it's not imposter syndrome, it almost borders on it, where you have that expectation of, like, I should be better than.
Right.
Because, like, I've done all this, I've had all the experience, I've done whatever, and why isn't it? Whereas some kid coming in off the street looks at your stuff, which you think is awful, right? And they go, oh my God, that's the best thing ever I've ever seen. And you're like, what, this? This? But you don't want to say garbage, because then that's insulting to you and them. But you're like, this is what you think?
Right, exactly.
But it's kind of relative, right?
It totally is. And it's funny, because when you said about the kid experience, it's like, when you're in front of an adult, the sense of, like, we're on the same level and stuff like that, there's a level where you're kind of trying to protect your ego, you know, it doesn't want to get hurt.
Yeah.
But when you're around a kid, it's almost like you're a little bit more likely to kind of surrender a little bit that, because you're also trying to protect the child's experience.
Yeah.
You know, like, only a jerk's going to run down the kid and be like, what are you talking about? This is crap, and you don't know the difference of it, right?
Yeah.
No, they're like, well, no, it could be better, but they love it. They think, like you said, Jonathan, a child might look at what you've done and think, oh, my, wow, holy cow, I still want to do this. You know what I mean? So you're not likely as likely to run down for that.
No, I think you're right. And that's one of the things I like about, say, like Huzzah, for example. You have the whole cadet program, so it's really nurturing to all the kids, where maybe they're starting out and maybe they don't have that inner strength for what they're doing, for their gaming, for whatever it is, whether it's model making and so forth. But it's nurtured, gives them this space to kind of explore that and to be nurtured and say, okay, what you're doing is good.
Right.
Do more of it.
Yeah.
You're doing good work. Don't feel bad about it. Just keep on going.
Right. And what one of the nice things really about getting kids involved in something like Huzzah, especially, like, yes, Tony and I show up with our museum quality tables and stuff, but there is a variety of skills and abilities and looks and things like that. So the kids get to just look at it and go, well, their stuff is this. So
yeah.
Can I ever do that? Am I so intimidated I'm never going to get it? And then they go and look and go, oh, that's good. I didn't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
So it really gives them a feeling of, like, there's a variety of abilities in there, so that people, like, kids don't feel intimidated to get into seeing what all the different stuff is.
It's a great thing about the con. Because, like I say, you go into the bold action room, you got your stuff, and you come out into the ballroom, and you know, there's a guy running a perfectly enjoyable game with, you know, felt roads.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But and so the kid goes, oh, well, I don't have to have the, you know,
have
the Uber stuff. I can actually play a game with this, and it's going to be awesome. So I want to get into this now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Because I'm not intimidated to get into it. You know?
Well, they have the community, right? It's all about community,
right,
isn't it?
That's
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
They can be like me, like back in the 70s, looking at the felt roads going, wow, this could be a lot better.
Yeah. And some of them are going to do that, and that'll be great.
Look, it's funny because, like, we have a laundry list of projects that we got to do for things that we want to cover on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always saying to him, and like, it's hard for me, but not as hard as it is for you, Adrian, where I'm like, you know, we're going to test out this rule set because, like, World sent it to us or whatever, and, well, we got to make an army, we got to do this and that. And I'm always saying, well, you know, we don't have to paint them, right? We don't have to assemble. We can just use the bases. We can use paper because, in that case, we're interested in the mechanics about it. And he's always like, no, we need the whole whatever. And
there's only so far I'm willing to go.
Well, and see, that's the thing. In, like you, I like seeing the stuff all done, whatever. But for me, for the purpose of it, like, it's, we got to talk about Hail Caesar. We got to talk about whatever the rule set is, Cruel Caesar, whatever. And how realistic is it for us to have painted armies of everything and every scale for every rule set that we're going to do?
Impossible.
Oh,
yeah. And all the terrain and all the whatever.
I wouldn't even try.
And that's the thing. So, like, we try to prioritize.
Yeah,
like,
I'm going to have to start making compromises, I think.
But, well,
yeah,
absolutely.
Like, just using, like, paper figures. Or anything.
My goodness.
Tony is very popular today.
Yeah.
Well, that's
everybody
why.
Loves tennis.
And I'd love to say that it's not my actual father trying to get in touch with me because his golf tournament's over, but it is.
See, that's important, though. He's passionate about that, right?
Yeah, you're darn right.
So, and that's okay.
Oh. Yeah, and that word right there, I think, is like one of the biggest parts of like doing the work that Tony and I do. Is we have a level of passion about it, and you know that's like talent, practice, all of that. None of that matters if you don't have any passion for it.
True. Yeah.
If you do not have any passion for it, you're gonna go, eh, done. You know. But when you have a passion for it, even if you're not that good, you want to do it, and you want to keep doing it over and over and over and over again. And each successive time, you're gonna get better and better and better. Like literally, right now, I could go in and grab my figure case of Russians, and I could show you the very first Russian I ever painted, and show you the most recent Russian I ever painted. And you can see the arc of, you know, 17 years of painting Russians, and you can see the changes at each step.
Yep.
You can look at our tables, and you can tell what we built in 2000 mm-hmm. and what we built this last week. You know, so you can really watch the progressions of people over time, and even over time, Tony and I get better mm-hmm. as we go. You know, at each step. So it's about passion.
Yeah.
You know, it really is about passion. So yeah, that's really what makes it go for people. And it's not necessarily about talent. You know, and that helps, as Tony mm-hmm. said. And practicing is very important, but you know, if you don't have the passion for it, you're not going to do it. And that's really, like, you got to get excited.
You
got to be into what you're doing.
Yeah, it's like if you don't have the passion, you keep painting figure after figure, but then it's just,
it's work.
The production line, basically. Yeah.
It's work.
Yeah.
It won't work.
No, of course not.
Yeah, no.
Every so often, people will write into us and be like, oh, how can I start a podcast? Do you guys know Johnny Grogan?
No, not off the top of my head.
So, like, every so often, he'll say, what do I need to start a podcast? Or other people. Or they'll be like, how have you been doing it for so long? And I usually say, I'm too stubborn to quit. And it's like, you got to stick with it. And you don't need anything, really. You get your phone, you can do a podcast. What do you need to paint? You need a brush. It doesn't have to be a fancy brush, right? It doesn't have to be the fancy paint. It makes it maybe a little nicer, easier to work with. Grab any old paint, any old brush, and just you do it, and then you keep at it. And then 15 years later, you're still doing it. But then, like you said, you're much better. So you look at your first thing. Like, I look at our first episode, and it's trash. And I say, don't ever listen to it. Because it's trash.
I think everybody who does this kind of work says the same thing.
It's absolutely trash. And then you go forward, and it's better. So your first mini is trash. Like, I found a picture of the first piece of terrain I ever made. It's trash. It's just, it's awful. And my stuff maybe not a whole lot better now. But, like, it's improved drastically compared to what it was before. So, like you said, if you don't have the passion, you're going to give up. Doesn't matter how good it is, you might have that spark, right? You might have that God-given talent or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And then you're like, I don't really care. It'd be like those guys who paint the 3 or 4 figures and they never get their army done.
Right.
Maybe they don't really have the passion or the time or whatever, but you can power through it if you have that passion.
Right, right, absolutely. And for me, for doing public games like at Huzzah or something at one of the game shops that are in the local area, for me, it's also it's like the expectation of being able to bring something to other people. Like, a lot of people look at this and they go, oh, geez, you know, you're not really getting paid to do any of it. Why are you doing it? Like, as though it's all about me.
Yeah.
And the reality is, at least for myself, is bringing this kind of stuff to other people, when you see the look in their eye, where you see how they feel, like, oh, gee whiz, you did all this stuff, but then you brought it out here to show me, or rather for me to play on, or for to share with me. For me, that's really important. It's really big.
Oh, you mean roll again for them?
It makes me become more, if you will, passionate about what I have, because I want other people to be able to experience more. Essentially, I'm getting excited about enriching their experience in life.
Mm-hmm.
Because frequently people then respond to that, and then they themselves become more excited or more passionate about the thing that they're doing. Like Bolt Action League that we wanted to run it here now. And a lot of things a lot of the guys say was, I was kind of cagey about jumping in at first, because a lot of things just kind of go the way of the dinosaur pretty quickly in this world. It's always the next hot new thing.
True.
Yeah. So why spend the money and the time and the investment of looking up, I don't know, you know, German camouflage patterns or what have you, if it's not going to be around?
Right.
And then they saw that we were keeping at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing up every month, once a week. once a month. And then others started to get involved in it too. So it became like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's not a waste of time for me. If these two guys are going to spend this much time doing it, maybe it is a worthwhile investment. So watching them get excited about war gaming or history or whatever it is, the whole kit and caboodle. Even if it was like, yeah, I found a new love for 40K. Awesome.
Yep.
Because that's fantastic. Because having something that, you know, isn't just the day-to-day working job thing. Come home, watch TV, get disappointed about the finale. And you know what I mean?
The finale of what?
Nothing. You know, we will shall not speak of that.
Right,
today is not that day.
Very good. Very good, John. I like it.
Right, you know what I'm saying, guys?
Not today.
Having something that you can get into that's just not that other stuff sometimes is feels great.
Yeah, it does.
But you know what? You got to say, not everyone would be like that. So it takes a certain type of person who has, I'm going to say selfless. I think you guys have a very giving personality, right? So that, because like if someone's a me kind of person, right? If I'm the me person, I'm not going to do it. I'll do it because I'll be like, well, what am I getting out of it? Like you said,
right?
How many people are coming? How does it make me feel as opposed to how am I helping others? So not that I'm not... don't want to say that that's a bad way to be, because everyone has their own kind of whatever.
We all have our own experiences.
Exactly, and we all have our pros and cons and everything, but like to stick with it as long as you guys have, and to keep on making it better, improving, and reaching out and doing all the networking and stuff, it's because not only do you care and you're passionate, but because like you're nurturing the community, you're helping to build it up.
And for Tony and I, when we were getting ready to start the Bold Action League, we talked about like, okay, what... why are we doing this? What's important to us? And it came down to we want fun, we want community, and we want to give somewhere for people to go and have a good time.
That's wonderful.
And somewhere for us to have a good time, too, because, you know, we want to still get a little enrichment for ourselves out of this, but we definitely... Yeah, exactly.
And that's back. It's just the problem is people aren't willing to make the investment oftentimes. You know, the people who are people who are like Jonathan said, the me people, is they're expecting to get paid first.
Yeah.
And by doing it this way, it's like the reverse. It's like, I hope I will get something back from this that will feel worthwhile, but I'm not doing it with that expectation.
Yeah.
But I find it always does. And it's amazing how much it comes back, too.
Yeah. So, you know, it's why we, you know, as a league, we stay away from competition. You know, we don't run tournaments.
I love that.
You know, we do a lot of things just to keep it fun, keep it light, make it feel like kind of a hangout. You know, which is what builds the community, because we're not stuck on what's the meta game, what's the prize payout, what's this, what's that, and if it's not good enough, I'm out. You know, we don't want to get that. Like, we want to get somewhere for people to go and have a good time. And that's really what gets me going, is that we're all there having a blast, interacting. I love crowds, so I'm one of those weird people like, oh, I get excited about a crowd. And I'm ridiculous some days. You know, just getting the group together, you know, and I mean, we've been pulling about 20 people a Saturday once a month.
Nice.
Coming in.
Do you guys do this in Hobby Bunker?
We do this actually at
Crossroads
in Standish,
Maine. Our friends, Crossroads Games, Brendan Hill runs.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we do that on the last.
Cat and those guys down at Hobby.
Yeah.
We definitely help, you know, spur them on a little. But we do our event on the last Saturday of each month.
Okay.
And you know, we've been pulling a consistent group, and the nice thing is we have this solid core group of guys who show up each time, and then we have, you know, the guys who could be there sometimes not. You know, so they kind of switch in, switch out. But when we all get together, it's not like, okay, guys, we're here to game. Let's get going. Come on, let's go. No, they get in. We're hanging out. We're talking about different history pieces we've learned, different paint jobs, techniques, sharing tips, you know, talking about, well, hey, you know, what should we do, you know? So it gets really exciting just to get there and just hang out and have fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's our biggest point is let's have fun.
Yeah,
let's not make it drudgery and work.
Well, see, I like that you guys really focus on that, because, and this is going to sound like I'm bashing these, but a lot of times I think with point-based games, people are attracted to it because they really like the tourney, organized play kind of setup.
Right, it's a deck-building aspect of it.
Yeah, Bold Action specifically designed for point-based.
And that's the thing. So I think a lot of people who maybe, like myself, I'm not into the whole organized play kind of thing. So if I see a bolt action event listed somewhere or people running it or playing it, I'm going to shy away from it because I'm like, I don't want to deal with how do they finagle their lists, because like that's making them happy, but that doesn't do it for me.
Right.
So knowing that you guys are kind of subverting that expectation a little bit, like happens in pop culture, for example, and it's just kind of nice that you have this other thing and that there's a demand for it, so that there's other people and you're able to create this kind of thing where, okay, maybe everyone wants to build like a fancy list and do this whole training thing, but there's a group of people who are interested in this and want to play this game who don't. So you can just kind of meet this other environment that maybe people don't know exists. And I think that's true for almost any game that's out there.
Right, and you know, we have, there's another group in Maine that they do a lot of focus on competitive play at a different shop, which is great, because so our guys who want to do the competitive play can go there and get that out of their system.
Yeah.
And then come and join us and actually be cool about having just some fun. So
yeah, you guys, like, it's mutually beneficial.
Absolutely.
Right. So that those who signed up for a game that they felt should be more about deck building and points costs and the best army list that they've been researching painfully over the internet, they can actually get that. They do that. They do play. And that's, like I say, it's not running down the people who want to do that.
Like you said, everybody's got different.
Everybody's got different expectations for it. But I do know that there's a lot of people that play 40K and they're like, I wanted to get the Orc army, but there's absolutely no way this army can win. Even with the deck building, we can't make it win.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that all this desire and passion and interest to paint up those green orcs and stuff, it's gone. It's gone. And then you find after a while the club's gone from 40 players down to 4 players. And those 4 players have the winning armies, and not only that, but the winning army list that everybody knows about because it's been posted online. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, why'd you drop out? Well, I don't want to collect Eldar, and I don't want to build that list either. Like, if I did Eldar, I'd do this list, but I know I'd lose.
Right.
And that's true of any game that kind of is built like this.
Of course.
That's totally true. It's unfortunate, though.
Right.
Like, I used to play a lot of Flames
of War was thinking, right.
And, that was a big one for competitive.
Inking
out the lists and what's the codex for the army.
And I did some tournament play with it, and I was like, yeah, this is definitely not for me.
War Machine War, same thing.
Yeah, because I want to play the list that was fun.
Anything with points.
That list doesn't win.
Right.
I used to competitively play a very, 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 very popular card game that I got out of because I couldn't stand the deck building and the
it didn't have the magic in it for you anymore?
Yeah, it just didn't carry magic
for me. It just lost.
I've gotten to the point now where I will only play casually with friends.
So you planeswalked into another realm?
I totally did. And the bright side is, like, Crossroads Games has provided a great space for that with their kitchen table magic program.
Oh, that's
where
cool.
It's just people hanging out, having fun. Again, focusing on having fun, not bringing in this whole super competitive. It's not like we want to lose. Nobody wants to play a game and lose.
But
no, it doesn't matter what game you're playing. If you're not playing to at least try to win a little, like, why are you playing?
Yeah. Exactly.
But, you know, there's a level of difference between, oh my God, I have to win and I have to kick your patootis because, you know, that's the only way I get happy out of it. You know, and I definitely want to win, but if I lose, it happens, you know, and I can learn from my loss, you know, and see what maybe moves I could have done differently or what rule did I forget that maybe might have changed something a little bit, you know, and you can be a little more relaxed about enjoying your experience and not have to win to make your experience matter.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome to do that because I don't think in my life I've ever seen anybody playing that particular card game just for fun.
Not usually.
You know, I've always seen people playing at the store and they just don't look like they're enjoying themselves.
I've had some conversations.
They're enjoying themselves, but it's in that very serious kind of like playing poker level.
Yeah, it's like the difference between the weekend poker game at home and the World Series of Poker.
Exactly. I was just going to say that in history, when you brought up Flames of War, there's also that other aspect where you might be actually trying to play out or recreate, if you will. We all know that these aren't simulators.
No.
But you're trying to recreate something that actually has a true historical context. So let's say that the Panther tank is the one that wins all the games, right? But it wasn't in this conflict at this time or this period or this location or what have you within a historical context. Let's say you're really interested in, you know, when
pollen was falling, right? You're playing out with vehicles that aren't great. The Germans didn't win all the battles that were happening because the Dutch actually got their action together for a bit. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So all of a sudden you're playing with an army that nobody would normally play with at all.
Yeah.
You're playing out under a conflict or a battle situation that, you know, everybody's favorite army lost.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing with vehicles and stuff that seem to be just armored cars and junk, right?
Yeah.
But because you're going for historical context, because that's really what you're into, it means you're playing it out to see how did these guys win with this crappy stuff against this group, if you will.
Yeah.
Not so much about like, well, you don't have a Panther tank on there, so you're going to lose. Or,
well, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like the question, why would anybody play French? Because it's interesting and it's different.
Exactly.
And it's, you know,
it's actually,
flavor.
Yeah, it's really tough to find somebody that's willing to play early war or anything.
True story. And we've been actually doing, we run the league in like 3 month seasons.
Yeah.
And so each season we give it a general thing. We don't be like, you must show up with your X, Y, and Z, you know, we're finishing up what would be, you know, the early war period, 1940 prior.
Mm-hmm.
So as a basis, we kind of gave everyone was like, oh God, I don't have that kind of stuff. And I'm like, don't worry. Relax. If you're not into doing the thing, don't feel like you have to do it.
Right.
Show up and play bolt action. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I will give extra participation credit, you know, for if you show up with an early war list, you know, that's built around, you know, whether it's early war French. And, like, people, it really got people thinking about the different ways they could use their forces in the early war. People were like, Japanese, well, you know, what can I do? I'm like, you got all of China.
Yeah.
You've got all of, you know, Indochina.
True.
You know, the Soviets could fight in Manchuria against the Chinese, you know, against the Japanese.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of these little vignettes in that part that people didn't realize when they're looking at what they owned. And I was like, you know, the most challenging thing would have been the Americans. Like, yeah, it's like, yeah, before 1941, yeah, no, there was really not a lot of American action going on.
No.
So you're at a challenge for that, but it didn't mean they weren't involved in some little actions here and there. Cause the Japanese were marching through, you know, the entire South Pacific. So it did happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it gets people, you know, we do these little things to just kind of get people thinking about different time periods and looking at their forces differently or collecting different forces just to fit that time period a little bit. You know, so we're moving our next season. We're going into 1941, 1942, you know, so we'll be doing all the way, you know, Operation Barbarossa and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But that's not it, because there's a whole bunch of other stuff that, you know, I say it from the Russian perspective because I have Russians and Germans, but, you know, I'm working on Americans now. But, you know, we got players who are just now starting to learn some real history. You know, they're actually starting to go, oh, well, what did my army do in this time period?
Yeah, that's an exciting thing, too, because you get people coming to the game. I mean, you get all the gray-bearded fat guys coming to the game that already know the history.
We're non-judgmental here. Thank you very much.
I don't have the beard anymore, but I'm an old fat guy.
It's a welcoming safe space here on the show.
Yeah, any space I'm in is welcoming and safe. But yeah, it's fun because, you know, people who aren't as into history will see it and enjoy it and give it a try. And then, yeah, like I say, they start to learn about it, which is a cool thing.
Yeah.
Because it's something you hear all the time, you know, the graying of the hobby kind of thing.
But yep.
It does seem like it might be a little bit in danger. Not going away exactly, but falling off to a almost unnoticeable level. I mean, sitting around here this weekend, it doesn't look that way.
Right.
But go to any game store or whatever. I shouldn't say any game store. Most game stores, everybody talks about the friendly local game store.
Yeah.
It really means the friendly local 40K and Magic shop.
Often.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of too bad. So
the online stuff, I know that a lot of the shops are talking about how they're getting undercut as far as money and stuff goes.
They are.
Yeah.
I understand the business decision aspect of it,
right.
Definitely. But
right. So it becomes like they're only going to go with what they know they can sell, the basic thing, which means that they're less likely to carry the stuff that might be interest. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough thing for them. It's like, you know, I know the Warhammer stuff is going to move. Do I take any of that space away and throw up, you know, whatever historical miniature line?
And the challenge with historicals is we're all over the place in every scale, in every size. it's almost impossible for any store to really carry every line that anyone possibly want in Wargaming, because we are crazy people.
Yeah. Well, and even if they did, it'd be a terrible business decision.
Oh, yeah. And how could you carry that much stock to be prepared for everything? No way.
And getting on back to that point that you made about being, you know, the fat, gray old guy. Like, well, you know, when I was doing this kind of stuff when I was that kid, this is where I got a lot of my knowledge or inspiration or what have you, was from that fat old guy who was willing to talk to me.
Yeah, I mean, I started when I was 13.
Right, and that's something that's really important because, you know, we all have different personalities and characters to ourselves as individuals. Some of us aren't comfortable talking to people. Some of us do not want to really hang out with people or what have you. Yet we find ourselves doing this very social thing. And it forces you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
But for those guys like Mike Payne and stuff like that, where if, you know, as a kid, when you see somebody who looks like they, you know, they're this old adult who looks like he's actually excited that you're even present in front of them.
Yeah.
Or when you see the look in the eye of some old guy or old woman or whatever, and all of a sudden it's like they see that you're interested in the thing that they're into.
Yeah.
And then they care enough to talk to you about that. You know, they try to expand your world as the particular part of history or the particular part of their, how they do things within their hobby, what have you. It can be a real game changer because, you know, what if maybe you don't have folks that are into it. Maybe most of your friends are playing football and have no interest in what they're doing. They're busy doing PlayStation or what have you. Like, you know, you game with them, you hang with them, but then when you bring up that you want to do a card game or collect a mini or something, like, oh, come on, man, you know?
Yeah.
So there's always somebody out there that's kind of got that, like, oh, I don't know, I got friends, I got stuff going on, but I'm also interested in this strange little niche, something else. And I really feel that the hobby can open it up that much more when the older guy, if you will, is pointing out that he does bother to tell you about, well, you know, the Dutch actually fought pretty hard in World War II. Or, you know, the reason why the French went down wasn't really what everybody says it is when you're joking around.
Yes.
Like, if you actually really read it, like this book or that book, and you know, you can actually start to find out that nitty gritty stuff that you never knew about. Why? Because you're young. Guess what? When people grow up, they also don't find out about a lot of nitty gritty stuff. It isn't until you pour yourself into a specific hobby that you'll find out, you know, that you've been doing the wood grain wrong, or you're making your cabinetry or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like you get someone who's like, hey, you know, I'll hang out and talk to you about it. And then your whole world changes and expands. So the hobby of the game, the more we reach out, the more we contact people, the more that we're cool to kids or teenagers, the more each other, you know, when we're doing this, the more it'll grow. I think the social aspect of all this is far more important than people realize. They think it's just about the stuff, but it's really about the community aspect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And on to the point, you know, like the concern with the graying of the hobby, as you said, and you hear it, not just here in Utah or anywhere, you hear it a lot, people are concerned about that, and it's like, well, if you don't want that to be the case, you got to make the effort, you know, you've got to make the effort, like, you know, the Bold Action League, you know, just about every other month, we're doing kids-focused game day. You know, 14 and under, getting kids in, playing Bold Action, introducing them to history. And so far, we've had a great response, you know. I mean, we've had 8 attendees each time of kids coming to play Bold Action, you know. And then they start asking questions about history and, like, well, why is this like that? And, you know, so it takes an effort to get the kids into it, especially double now with the ease at which they can check out, you know, with, you know, phones and computers and video games. And no, and I don't have anything against video games because I play the heck out. You know, I love video games. But we're also people who understand community matters, you know, and we got to teach the kids the community matters or they're going to get locked into their own little isolation, you know, Facebook page, you know, or whatever that happens. You know, so those of us who can and are willing to, we need to make the effort to reach out and get young people and young adults into this hobby, you know, so that, you know, it doesn't grow. You know, and so that there is more continuing for it. And, you know, Tony and I do that a lot with, you know, inspiring them with the work that we do, which gets them inspired to do stuff, which gets us inspired to do more. Because we're like, yes, it's a big inspiration circle, and we're into it. So, it really takes an effort to not let things die.
Yeah.
You know, and it's and all too often with a lot of, like, the going, moving on to the next best thing, things just die after a while because people can't keep up that kind of energy. It's like, oh, what are we playing this week?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I have to build and collect and paint another army?
Yep.
You know, and that can be daunting after a while. It's like, okay, we're on our 17th rule set and our new scale, and it's like, yes, that's great. But are you just wearing people down?
you gotta really work effort
with it, and with kids especially, pick something and stick with it. Don't just rotate, because kids will be like, I can't track all of it.
Yeah, they're not going to do it.
Those are themselves. Like, well, right. Oh, fantasy this. Oh, now I want to do this, Dad. Mm-hmm. You show them how to kind of keep
You can rein them in.
Right. Bring them into a little focus. Whatever it is, whether it's science fiction or historical or whatever. It doesn't matter.
It's funny because, like, for the longest time with the show, I always felt like we're going to just stick with one thing, but then the rest of the industry was like, we have all these new games, and so, like, we had to adapt as much as I hate it to be like, we're going to cover all this other stuff, so how are we going to do it? But I feel that's part of the problem. And I'm like, they need you, right? All these businesses have to in order to stay in business, because how many times can you sell a U-boat, right? You can only do so many of them before people are like, I got 10 of those, right?
I'm all set. I don't need another U-boat.
I'm good. So then you need another whole rule set that comes out, or new edition or whatever.
Right.
But at the same point, like, the average hobbyist isn't going to go and buy 40 different... They might go and start, but they're not going to finish it.
Well, you know, and that's kind of been like an evolution for Huzzah. Huzzah started off as a very focused historicals convention, and in the early days there was a lot of conversation about whether to allow sci-fi games or not, you know, and eventually the decisions was made that why would we chase away people, you know? Why would we be so stuck on, well, we're this one thing and we can't be anything else?
You know, that had to be tough conversation for them. I think the fear was, it's like, we don't want to turn into a Magic 40K convention and drive away all the historical guys.
Because we wanted something for the historical guys, because that matters.
Yep.
And so, you know, there was a balancing act in the early days of figuring out how we were going to let it in, and, you know, right now it's pretty just open, you know, but the great side is, they maintain their core.
It works.
It's very historical.
It is,
and they have the fringe, you know, sci-fi games. I mean, I ran a sci-fi game on Friday. I ran Fallout Waste and Warfare, which was awesome. You know, something a little different. But it still sits under the wargaming banner. So we're still on the same overall theme with a slightly higher focus on historicals. But we open arms to anybody to want to come in and run a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which matters.
Yeah,
you know,
it
it's inclusive, not exclusive. And I think that one of the biggest things that can kill a group is being exclusive.
Well, I've seen it a lot, and I hate to say, because it's not a group you would think you would find it, but a lot with role players, actually, where they're like, okay, this is the rules that we're doing, and we have to have this, and it's nothing else. So what rules are we doing? Are we a Pathfinder group? Are we, you know, whatever? And someone wants to change it slightly, and maybe doesn't fit in. And yet, I think that people who tend to play those kind of games, I think they view themselves as being very inclusive, because they don't care who you are, and really you shouldn't. You come and you play, but there's a lot of, like, you hear a lot about it in the press now, like, online, there's all these, well, so-and-so did this and that, we can't have them, so they draw on these lines, or the allegations of, like, well, we don't like how they play their game, so they're done, and this and that, and there's all these borders being drawn about it.
Yeah.
Right.
And that doesn't seem to happen so much with historicals.
Right. And I think it's because it takes, it could, like anything, human beings trying to be, you know, clannish or tribal about stuff is kind of almost inborn to our experience as human beings.
True.
You know what I mean?
It's survival.
Right, and it's that kind of like, well, if I don't convince people that this game is great, it may diminish. So I got to be out there beating the war drums that protect it and to keep it, you know, surviving and stuff. And each group feels like, you know, oh, darn it, Pathfinder's about the deep six.
Yeah.
We got to rally around it or what have you.
Just,
you know?
Yeah, and that's not just a gaming phenomenon. I mean, I'm into the photography and stuff like that. And a camera is just a tool, right?
Right.
But it's ludicrous how emotionally attached people get to their equipment. You know, it's like the fight between people who use Canon cameras and Nikon and
right.
I'm into Fuji now. It's like, it's
oh nice
it's
going,
insane.
You went to Fuji, huh?
Exactly.
Well, I'm done with you now.
Yeah.
Splitter.
Yeah. I'm Fuji guys. Don't you know it's not a full frame sensor?
I do. But how can you even call yourself a photographer
anymore? You're right. I know. But yeah, it's true. And I think it's the same thing with hobbies. You get emotionally invested in whatever it is you happen to be a fan of.
Great.
And then when somebody else comes along with a different perspective, it's not just that they enjoy something different, it's that they're trying to destroy what you enjoy, which isn't the case.
That's right.
But
it becomes ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the people that, let's face it, there's some human beings out there that are like, yeah, my fun begins where yours
ends.
There are a couple of those people.
Luckily,
it's not predominant.
Right? Yeah. Thank goodness it's not predominant. Because I'd be like, oh, you guys are just drudge.
You guys have transitioned, though, from not just making tables for your own, use it for the club and things like that. You actually moved into, you do commission work, right?
Yep.
And you started selling pre-made terrain.
Yes.
Want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get rid of my junk.
You have too many egg cartons at home?
I can finally get rid of that Styrofoam Ziggurat 40K terrain I've got.
But yeah, no, so, you know, aside from doing the commission work and custom design work that Tony and I will do, I've also started moving into doing, oh boy, my brain just broke.
Really?
It has been a long weekend. Wow. Yeah, we've moved into doing like some urethane cast roads, rivers, streams. We have plank roads, dirt roads. We have a variety of things. I do this in concert with my friend Chris Penny, who owns the molds. And we cast them out of a flexible urethane. We custom paint each set. So it's each an individual. We're doing, you know, we have stuff here for sale this weekend. We're also doing things for orders, and we're going to be putting more up on Facebook page for Iron Hammer, and hopefully soon I will be actually having a real website coming up, which is going to be exciting.
Awesome.
So I've owned the address for a while and just haven't been able to find the right hosting for it yet. So it's always so challenging to get the right hosting. I'm like, I am not jumping in just on whatever comes first. I got to figure this out and research it before I just start throwing somebody my money.
Of course.
So we've definitely started moving into having some more stuff just kind of readily available or made to order, in whatever style people want. So we can do it, you know, very custom work with that. So it's a lot of fun. It's a new adventure to do the casting and painting and stuff. So
that's awesome.
Like that, so.
Well, I know this guy needs some rivers, don't you?
I do, yeah. I tend to make, for the smaller scale stuff, I make the rivers just out of, they don't look as good as yours. I was looking at yours. But the silicone cloth.
Oh yeah, no, I've definitely seen that technique. It's an awesome technique.
Yeah, it's fast.
It is.
But it's tough to do like wide. You can't do like really wide first. So that's kind of where I'm in. I'll be in touch.
I like that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And there
Absolutely.
Is some beauty about having it just done.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that is kind of the biggest thing about pre-painted terrain that's up for sale, like whether I have, you know, Tony and I both have items for sale of things from the basement of York skits that we built and painted for to be sold there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've got my booth there with the pre-painted, and it really is like a, oh my God, you mean I don't have to do anything to it? It's ready to go, I just have to put it on my table?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Give it to me all day. You know,
it's worth the money.
Yeah.
Well, because it's how much do you value your time?
Yeah.
And, you know, what you feel like your ability is. And, you know, if you're like, well, I don't have the time, I'm not really, you know, I can do it, but it's not going to look like that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any problem buying it. They're like, no, this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's done. It's perfect. I don't have to do anything else.
Yeah, I'm definitely at that spot with certain types of terrain, like trees, for example. I've tried to make trees any number of times. It's just, it's not worth it.
It's so time consuming. You're better off just to buy some woodland scenics and be done with it.
Yeah, just throw money at somebody for that. Yeah, definitely. And I like the rivers and stuff. I mean, I could probably figure out a way to make that work, but why bother?
Well, yeah.
And it is a time thing for me.
Yeah, 20 hours later, you may have figured it out, and it may look like
it
you want it.
It might look okay. Yeah, but... Yeah.
You know, but when you see, like, a urethane cast piece, it's got great detail, and it's already painted. Well, that just saved you 20 hours of your life.
Exactly.
Yep.
That you can do something else with. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to fill that for time with all sorts of other things.
Tons of things.
But, you know, it's time. Yeah, you know, it comes down to saving people time and still being able to have fun and do what they want to do.
Yep.
You know, so that's really a big part.
Projects of scale. A lot of people, when they, you know, the proverbial at-home gamer, what have you, that's doing this, probably might even be in his college dorm right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I know when he's talking about those trees. I'm working on some right now. But the space and time that I have over this next week, I'll probably do like 12. Well, I need probably 100.
100. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I can't, but I can't do 100 of them in one go.
Yep.
You know, I'm kind of stuck to doing these 12, and even these 12 are getting to be a little bit out of hand on my table here and stuff as far as getting that project done.
Yep.
Next thing you know, life catches up with you, and it's a couple months later, maybe a year later, and you're like, oh yeah, that tree project. And then the stuff's not in stock anymore, or somebody doesn't make it, or now the color of the green's a little bit different, and that drives you nuts. Or, I mean, it's not that it's wrong, but I know for some people, they're like, it's not the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and then you find yourself kind of like unsatisfied with the project as it's trying to painfully move along, and it's creating all this negative energy because it's still not done, and it's a year later or what have you.
Right.
And if you're able to get somebody, I mean, it doesn't even have to be us or anyone, you know what I mean? It can be anybody, but somehow there's a great way, it's like a bocage project or your tree project, and you just buy it.
Yeah.
You just buy it, and then all those projects of scale and all that kind of stuff, it was somebody else's worry, it was somebody else's concern, it was somebody else's mess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, the vapors and the smell and the this and the that and all the headache of when one of them didn't go right and you had to, had to fix it and repair it. You know, all that's gone. You're just getting the finished product and you're ready to play. And you can focus your time on what? Maybe the minis that you're
going to be doing. Right. Or the scenario you're running.
Yeah.
Or, you know, God forbid you have children.
Oh, I know.
Says to the new father. You know, it's things like that. That's really what makes it, you know, a service to people, because it gives them a chance to be like, well, I'm busy with my newborn, and I have zero time to do anything, but I need this done because I have a project that I want.
Yeah.
Well,
and I can tell you that, like, from all the people that I've known and got in contact with or been in contact with, and there's some fantastic talent out there, and other people that are, as it were, being hired to paint figures or make terrain and stuff that I've contacted. It's always worth it. I can also tell you that if you find somebody who's charging what you feel is really, you know, too expensive, that just means that it's not something that you can afford. But I can tell you, it is actually truly worth it. Anybody who's charging less is really giving away their time, if you will. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I've looked at like some figure painting services because it's really not that. I'm getting better at it, as we've talked about before, but it's really not an aspect of the hobby that I enjoy. I just want to play the game.
Me too.
Right. Right. But, it's totally legitimate.
Yeah, but I've looked at some services, and it's like the ones that I can afford or that I was willing to pay what they're asking, it's like that's as good as what I'm doing now, so there's no value added. So,
right, right.
I mean, I suppose you could look at the time savings, but still not worth it.
Right. Exactly. And then there's other people, like, I can think of, you know, like... Sasha Hearn in Germany.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that guy's a god.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not going to pretend that I would totally to have Sasha paint me a force for bolt action. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I'm not going to pretend at all. Or could I afford it? Would he even have me, you know, hire him or anything? I couldn't afford it. You know,
no
way. But I'm not going to pretend that every single euro that I gave him wasn't absolutely worth his time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just not something I can afford.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all.
Yeah, that's why I looked at it. I thought it would be a good way to go, but it's not, because it's either more than I'm willing to pay
Right.
And like I said, the ones I can afford, I can do just as good. So
exactly, and that's what you find. You find the guy or the woman, you know, the person who is able to do what you're willing to pay at the level that you find acceptable,
yep.
and that your personal taste is.
Yeah.
You know. Well, you use them for something special, whether it's your commander
yeah.
or
well, that,
a vehicle
yeah,
or what, like a certain piece, an artillery piece or whatever. Maybe something you don't do as well, or you
yeah,
just have the time
legit. For yeah. a particular commander, like Dioram or whatever. You
yeah.
That, yeah, that can
and
work well.
Then you
yeah.
spend the money for that one thing or a special unit or whatever.
Yeah, I had a guy who does 40k and he got a Titan.
Oh, there you
and
go.
He said, you know, I spent $200 on this Titan and I just don't want to mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, you know, I just, at this point, he's like, I'm willing to spend the money to have you paint it because, you know, if I do it wrong, I'm just going to hate myself for ruining the model.
I will have wasted $100. Yeah.
Right, exactly, exactly. So, you know, he's like, he's painted all the other stuff that he owns.
Yeah.
It's just this one piece. He's like, no, this time you step up and get it done right. That's
yeah.
And I totally appreciate where he's coming from with that.
No, it makes a difference.
It does. And, you know, I mean, I paint big houses for a regular, you know, day job, you know, and I like that. With time, like anyone can paint a house, you know, anyone can dip a brush in a bucket and slap paint on a building. You
oh,
know?
Yeah.
But the difference between, you know, you doing it and me as a professional.
Why do you look at me and not John?
Oh,
because
I'm sleeping. I thought you'd take it better, Adrian. Really. but you know the difference between having a professional take care of your job for you and do it while you're at work, and you're not involved, you're not covered in the dust and all the paint. And,
yeah.
You know all of that. There's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
A lot. You know, there's
yeah.
a lot of freedom in that. You know, and that's why you know painting the little houses is a service because it's like, nah, we're gonna take that headache out of your hair. We're going to get it done for you. Yeah, we're going to charge you for it, but our time's valuable, your time's valuable, everyone values their time.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, we just, this is what we're doing. So, you know, it's what makes it valuable. You know, is you know, and when people hit their point where they're like, oh, that's just too much for me. I'm like, hey, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to say, well, aren't you terrible? You can't afford that. No, I get it. You
yeah.
know, and it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You know, but you know, if you want to save your pennies and collect yeah. together, and then go for it. If that's really what you want to do, let's do it.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna like make you feel bad because you thought I was too expensive, you know, or
yeah.
what have you. I'll be like,
peasant,
no, I totally
can't
afford. Yeah. Yeah. you little plebeian. You
know? I can't believe I even wasted my time at this interview with you.
Now he's definitely talking to you.
I figured. That's it. Done with you. Armageddon.
Oh dear. We hit that point.
The safe word has been invoked.
But you know, it's really comes down to valuing your time and you know what time do you have to give to your practice and what do you want to get done?
True.
You know, and that's why we're here doing this. You know, we want to give people time in their lives to the other things they want to enjoy.
It's a public service.
Absolutely.
The National Guard, we're just trying to help people.
Yeah,
there you go.
Firemen, it's all the same thing.
That's right, exactly.
Absolutely. You deserve hazard pay, in fact.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Some days more than others.
Yeah. So what else do you guys have coming down the pipe? Special events or projects or things you're working on?
Wow, okay.
New stuff for sale?
We got a lot of stuff coming up.
Yeah?
We've got some new boards that we've been working on. So we've got at least two new boards that are in the planning stages. And some
oh
of the
yeah, they were supposed to be here at Huzzah, but the weather
was
so
hit.
Horrible. And I work out of a four-room apartment. So everybody's like, where does all this stuff get created? You know, they have this fantasy that I'm doing it.
Kitchen table?
I'm doing it on the kitchen table.
That's where I work, too. I got about that much space to do all my
right, so you can see a
maybe one day we'll have
a
studio.
Of
one.
Its own.
Yeah,
that would be amazing. But, you know,
right.
We work with what we got. So we've got some new terrain coming up that we're going to be doing.
What will they be looking like, the terrain?
Well, one is
top
going to
secret
be like...
There.
Yeah.
I got to try.
next year says I won't be spoiled.
We've got to leave a little bit to the imagination. But, you know, also this summer, we're going to be also laying out some great events at Crossroad Games and, you know, other stores that we may be able to connect with. I'm really trying to network the Bold Action groups around and kind of get us, especially here in New England, getting us all kind of working together and supporting each other. Because, you know, we do intermix a lot, you know, and it's not like out of the question for me to go to Boston and play because it's only 2 hours away. I mean, haven't had a chance for that yet, but it's not out of the question for me to get down there and play. So I want to support them as much as I can from where I'm at. But we're definitely going to be doing some more of the kids' days at Crossroad Games, you know, continually trying to grow that community. Another Bolt Action thing I'm going to try to do, I think around July, I got to get with Brendan and figure out when and if we can, is I would also like to do a women's only Bolt Action game day.
Nice.
We've had several female players start coming through and really enjoying the game and stuff like that. So I would like to get them all just kind of hanging out, playing a game together, you know, take off any inherent weird pressure that maybe from playing with the guys who do this all the time for grognards. You know, and they're more usually a little more casual about their interaction. Not to say that, you know, they're all that way, but most of them are new. So I don't want them, like with the kids, I just don't want you to feel intimidated to come and play. I want it to be in a space that you feel safe to just come play, have fun, not feel like you have to know more or compete more or any of that.
Make it accessible.
Absolutely. So I'm looking into July to do a women-only game day and see, you know, what success we can get out of that. And if it's successful, maybe I'll look at like twice a year for something like that.
Cool.
You know, I'm trying to do the kids' game days every other month right now, and if that starts gaining more traction, we'll increase the amount of gaming time, and also hopefully those kids will then start wanting to join us on our regular monthly game day.
Yep.
And expand that community, because it'd be great to just have the kids there with us playing along.
And then later it'll be like one of those scenes from Glengarry Glen Ross, you know, the kids out there that are getting the people playing and stuff, we'll get the kitchen knives, you know, rather the car, and the ones that come in second place get the kitchen knives, and the third kids, you know, they get housed.
You live in a very dark place, don't you?
I told you I'm part of a special dark company.
But yeah, and then also, I don't know, this summer as well, we're definitely going to try to set up, not necessarily just a Bolt Action, but a historicals game day, trying to center around the fact that we're at, what, the 75th anniversary of Operation Overlord coming up?
Yeah.
You know, so we want to do some of that more D-Day 1944 focus a little bit. So, and I'd like to introduce players to a bunch of different rule sets. It was awesome that a lot of my players who came got to go out and look at different things. We had one of our regular guys was like, no, I didn't sign up for play Bolt Action. I wanted to learn something new each game.
So that's awesome.
Played a different game, different rule set each session, just to try new stuff.
Yeah.
So you know, I wanna do something that will, you know, still be kind of along the themes we're all playing with, and you know, you can play with the forces if you got them. But I want to start getting some people like, hey, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that we can do. It's one of the reasons why I love historicals, is because a 28mm, you know, World War II army is a 28mm World War II army. It doesn't matter what your rule set is.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Well, they go across.
Right. Change my basing on my damn rules.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so,
no thanks.
No, I've been down that road so many times.
So some of it's helping, you know, teaching players the value of understanding what playing in historicals is that you're not locked into the one rule set with the one thing and the one codex.
Mm. Yeah.
You can get into a variety of other things that you can use the same stuff you own.
Yeah.
You don't have to, like, reinvest every time in your models. You just start reinvesting in rule sets and,
there you go.
And checking them out, you know. So, and then that just helps grow what people know out there. So we're definitely, you know, definitely trying to do things to kind of really expand people and the community that's being involved.
Nice.
But yeah, so those are some of the things, like, off the top of my head in my third day of, you know, no sleep, I couldn't come up with. So.
Oh.
And I gotta move, so, you know.
Yeah, so he's on quiet time until the end of the month.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's moving.
I pack up all my stuff, but the good news is I'll have my own room, and I might even use it to do this thing.
So if people want to keep up to date with all the things you're doing and all the changes and stuff, what's the best way for listeners to stay in touch? And
definitely check out the Bold Action League of Maine Facebook page.
Okay.
You do not have to be a local to join it. We will let anyone come in and lurk on our page and watch what we're doing.
You let me lurk, so
absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely. Also, you know, for any of the business-related things that are going to be coming up with Iron Hammer Studio, like the Iron Hammer Studio page, that will be where we finally notify people of the actual web page showing up. So those are definitely two of the spaces. And also checking in with CrossroadGames.com and the Crossroad Games face page, because we also get put on their schedule. So you can also just really quickly and easily figure out what's going on for the month and see what's happening. So those are really, you know, I love all the interconnected ways that we can keep up with each other now. So
that's great.
Of course, you can always use the old tried way of the moon, the full moon. Summoning of your, you know, like how we did it back in the
get your sea glass out and
right. Do some flags and some smoke signals, you know.
Exactly, right. You know, that's how we, like, how do we find the other role players in our town? You put up the bat signal in the guard clouds.
You know? Yeah. So much different now. I can't even imagine how we gamed back in the day.
It was,
right?
It was like, yeah, it was hard. It was like and also, I don't know about what town you guys came from, but like, you're kind of taking your life in your own hands, walking around saying, like, hey, do you want to role play?
The hell are you talking about?
Weirdo.
Yeah. Are you one of those geeks? Come here, little puke. You know, so,
you know what I mean? So you had to be, like, pretty careful. Luckily, when I was in high school, in my room, groups, we had like literally one of the the kid with the most truancy, and you know, and then we had the football captain, and he totally was like, you can't tell anybody I'm doing this with you guys, and we didn't, you know. It was mum's the word, but it was pretty funny seeing like all of us getting together, you know. It's like, yeah, we had a couple of kids who were definitely the book nerds, but then to have like this kid sitting there smoking cigarettes with an FM 101 t-shirt ripped from when his dad grabbed him, you know, and then the other guy's the football captain, you know.
Wow.
It was a pretty funny crew.
That's wild.
Right. But we'd all get together, and I'll tell you, his truancy took a dive, and the social worker was like, why, you know, boy, you seem to have turned a corner. You know, you come into class on time, and you're not talking back to the teachers, and you're showing up. You know, this is good. You haven't been in detention in a while. And he's like, are you kidding me? Every time I have detention, I miss an hour of the game that we're running. So he was like, this isn't for you. This is for me.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
I love it. So, Adrian, if people want to stay in touch with what you're doing, how can they do that?
All the usual stuff, the podcast, fan books, or Facebook page.
Well, we do have a fan book.
Yeah, you know, just stop. So, yeah, the Facebook group for the podcast fan page, the Wargaming Recon Facebook group, and you can get in touch with me on Twitter, but I probably won't respond.
@abenson229. That's okay, I'll tag you.
There you go.
Right. And all the stuff.
I just ignore all your tags.
I don't
care for
them. But I tag you anyway. Because
whether you like it or not.
Because I have to.
It's the new technology.
And, of course, here on the show, we're on all the things everywhere as Wargaming Recon. You can find us wherever you listen to other great podcasts. And I want to thank you both for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us on, John.
And taking the time to join us.
This is awesome. It's so much better than talking to John.
Well, it usually is.
Right.
Imagine
being
mean. I got to talk to myself all the time.
Once again, we're a public
service. I'm the funniest person I know.
We're here for you.
Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. And remember, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're taking playing Bolt Action, what?
Nothing.
Do you want to speak up?
No, go ahead.
Yes? I'm about to call you a walking carpet over here.
No, finish your outro.
Yeah. Now I'm going to do it all over again. Yes! Do I have to start all over at the beginning?
ahead.
It's supposed to be impromptu. Like, I'm a professional, and now you're going to make it seem like it's all rehearsed because I've already done
right
it.
Right now, your audience is watching the credits rolling as this is all going on in the background.
And they're just like, not again. See, usually we have this at the beginning.
Oh,
I do the intro and I mess up. I mess up in the beginning, and he says, because we're professionals, and then I laugh for 5 minutes, and... Yeah. Then we nothing.
It can take 10 minutes to actually get the podcast going by the time he gets.
Oh yeah.
This was an unusual occurrence.
Could we put like some outtakes of stuff in there as well? Like, or is it worth sitting in the theater this long?
Is there a secret at the end of the credits?
All right, finish it up. Finish it up.
See, damn you! Every time, I swear to God. Well, thank you all for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us and have these great guests come into your ears. I hope you get some inspiration for terrain making and gaming. Remember, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're spending making amazing terrain, you know that you have to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit WargamingRecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 17th to the 19th, 2019 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.
You happy?
I'm happy it's over.
Try it again. I didn't like that take.